It was sort of like American Bandstand mainly just recorded, mimed, the top 40 mimed.
Yeah.
It was the BBC's answer to the best music show ever, Ready, Steady, Go.
Yeah.
Which was on the commercial stations on Friday.
And the folks would come in and lip sync to. That was a blast from the past. Who was that?
Yeah, Slade.
Slade, singing their big hit.
Yeah, come on, fill the noise.
Yeah, there you have it. This is Trace It to Durian, where you're listening to my show every Tuesday night from 8 to 10 p.m. live from the Double Wide, where I feature the music of my friends, mostly. I'm a singer-songwriter, and I've been at it for a long time, and I've known a lot of people, done a lot of things, gone a lot of places, and most of them, you know, I paid off everybody and got most of the negatives back. But that's usually the focus of my show, is the music of my friends. And I also like to do interviews with musicians while they're traveling through, and other local heroes and people who are involved in music in one way or the other, or community. And tonight we're speaking to the one, the only, Arnaldo Levine. Arnaldo is a presenter here at KOWS, KOWS 107.3 LP Community Radio here in downtown fabulous Occidental. And Arnaldo has been just wowing us day after day here, week after week, with his stupendous guests. He's been getting incredible people. people, interviewing the likes of Richard Thompson and Brian Auger and David Davies. And now we understand your next interview is with...
Yeah, this Friday it will be with Reg Presley of the Troggs.
Brown, great breaking group, the Troggs. They were really way ahead of their time. Like the first punks, practically, I think. You
know? Yeah, they were really frowned on at that time.
Really good.
And a whole nother twist. Then on the 31st, I have Cindy Sheehan.
She plays a really mean lead guitar. She's just smoking. So you get Cindy Sheehan. How wonderful.
Yeah, and so we're going to have an interview in the studio with her. She's coming out to Occidental, and hopefully she'll be here at the farmer's market as well, so be able to talk to people, and hopefully cows and everyone out there will come down and give her support. She is an amazing person. I admire her greatly.
Yes, as do I.
And she's doing a wonderful thing to try and make politicians tell the truth.
So Kaz will be hosting Miss Cindy Sheehan. She'll be here at the Farmer's Market this Sunday? This Friday?
On the 31st.
Oh, on the 31st.
Weeks, yeah.
Oh, great. I'll be back. I'm leaving this Friday. We're going to have Sam Page and Allegra Broughton. They're called Solidaire. They're a beautiful duo, a husband-wife team, and they're just great. And they're going to be our musicians presenting, this Friday at the Farmer's Market, which, to me, is the finest little farmer's market in the world.
Now, Sam Page, was he with Dan Hicks? That name rings a bell.
He was, I don't know. You'd have to ask him. He's one of the finest bass players I've ever heard, and plays cello too, and he's just magnificent musician. He's played on a lot of people's CDs. Just finished playing a cut on my CD, my new CD that's coming, that I'm finishing up now at Doug Jane's. Wonderful musician. He may very well have played with Sam Hicks.
Solidaire, that was the song by John Martin, of course.
Oh, John
written
Martin.
Written about Nick Drake.
Is John Martin still with us, or did he pass away?
Yeah, last about a year ago.
I'm so sorry. What a voice.
Yeah, wonderful guitarist voice.
Amazing. Yeah, and Nick Drake, of course, was...
The greatest talent ever to live on this whole wide earth ever.
I know, brilliant singer-songwriter. I know, I loved his voice.
Yeah.
Too, and he also has passed away.
Yeah, he was only like 26 or 27. Yeah. This was in the mid-70s, just about the time. I used to play him on the radio, all those people who never got played.
Yeah, we do that. That's what I try and do here and in my show, is play the music of the people that I think are just fabulous, that aren't really great, well-known. But because the music industry has changed so very much, and the independent nature of music makes it so that musicians have to be their own promoters. But in a way, it's wonderful because the bar is coming up. I think the music is getting better and better and more interesting and less under the auspices of these crazed, companies, which are just such a drag.
Well, that's the trouble, because they just they kill the creativity, it seems.
In the day, it used to be that some of the bigger recording companies would nurture talents and hold on to them for a while and give them a chance to develop, but that's way over, because they want instant hits, they want it now, and there's no patience for artists to grow. So the music is becoming more and more homogenized, isn't it,
from the corporate sense, definitely. And that's why indie stuff and, computers now, you have a garage band and you can make your own CDs. And it's not, we're not confined anymore.
We have a phone call, Arnaldo. Would you like to take it?
I would take it.
Let's take the call.
Hello, cows.
Arnaldo's on the phone, and I'm going to take this opportunity to tell you a little bit about... WackoBB.net for its generous support. We want to thank them. You can join the online bulletin board for the local progressive community at WackoBB.net. Connecting conscious community in the North Bay. WackoBB.net. Connecting conscious community in the North Bay. This is so great. Arnaldo's on the phone with a fan. God only knows what they're talking about, but they're having fun. And you're welcome to call in and speak with us tonight. God. We're going to have to find out what the joke is. Arnaldo, who is that?
That was our wonderful fellow programmer, Roberto.
Oh, Roberto.
And he says he just looked out the window down in Occidental, and there's three police squad cars massing at the post office right now. He's not sure what they're doing. But.
Oh, God. We're going to be, boys and girls, if you can hear us out there, help, help. You know, they may bust us any minute now, and I would blame them, would you? Jeez Louise.
We'd be famous.
We would be famous. They'd call us out of here screaming. But nobody, the thing about it is that nobody would want to confiscate this equipment. They'd say, please, just keep we're doing a public service by keeping this equipment, I think, and not, you know.
Keeping it out of the recycling bins.
Yeah, but where nobody would want it. Which is another good reason why people should support cows, because we could use all the help we could get keeping our little, you know.
Yeah.
We could get a boat and go out. If worst comes to worst, we can just haul all this stuff, put it in a boat, go out, and just do it.
Yeah, in Salmon Creek, you mean?
Or? Yeah, we would Salmon Creek, and we can broadcast that way, just from our little rowboat.
Be good. I love it.
And people could give us smoked salmon and not get in trouble at all.
As long as they don't throw it at us from the banks.
It could happen. They have to find us first. So now you were doing this now for several years, because we're talking to Arnaldo about his day as a pirate radio DJ in England, in London. He was one of the first land-based pirate broadcasters. They, you know, BBC had if you're just tuning in, BBC had a monopoly on all media in England, all throughout England, and I guess Ireland, too. Were they the Irish under the auspices of the English as far as broadcast and media was concerned?
No, they had their own Irish broadcasting.
They did.
Yeah,
with probably the same kind of rules.
There were some pirate ships off of Ireland as well.
Yeah. So some people who really wanted, who couldn't stand the constriction of the BBC, started broadcasting in international waters so that they couldn't be prosecuted, and beaming music and probably talk radio too. I think there were some interviews, as I recall, from pirate radio that people would go out and talk as well.
Oh, yeah, there was. There were some very interesting, some great... late night shows, some kind of great underground or jazz, some great DJs doing that.
Great stuff. Programming. And so they were doing that from the boats for the longest time. And then it got very hard for the boat people to continue to do that, because there was a new law that was passed where anybody who helped these guys would get prosecuted. And so it became very difficult to sustain and maintain the pirate operations from the boats. And so some enterprising young folks started to do the pirate stations on land, but they had to be very careful because it was against the law, and they didn't have the protection of the 3 mile international waters thing. They were right there. And so Arnaldo was one of the first of these pirate broadcasters, and he was getting busted right and left all the time. He had to jump over buildings and through buildings faster than a speeding bullet and try and escape these guys, and quite often did not.
Right.
So now, and then we were talking about the fact that you got busted a lot, that you had to give up, you finally gave up your day job.
Yeah.
Went on the dole. Your parents must have been so proud. So happy.
At last, I found a direction in life.
Direction in life. and he found himself doing terrible, terrible things to maintain his broadcast habit, like lying to nuns and things like that.
How far did I go, right?
how low you went. But this was all in the service of a greater good, which was to broadcast rock and roll to people who were desperate for it. So now we've brought you up to this point where you've been... broadcasting for quite some time as an underground broadcaster. You've known what it is to be chased by women,
and chased
by women, and slowed down as best you could to be caught. And then you so tell me, when did you start to wind down your experience, and have I left anything out? Is there something that you want to tell me before? Oh, you know what? One of the things I wanted to ask you about, we talked about you'd stayed in some of these cracked houses. You had that wonderful boat on the Thames underneath Mick Jagger's.
Right.
Can you remember other interesting locations where you were broadcasting? You'd have to break down and broadcast all over the place after a while. Yes. You go from place to place, so not to be apprehended by those vicious post office guys.
Exactly.
But so tell me, where were some of the interesting, more interesting places that you broadcast from?
Oh, a couple of wonderful places. One was the Queen's Marching Grounds in Windsor Castle.
How the hell did you do that? How'd you get in there?
Well, it was...
Oh, my God.
There was this thing that used to go on called the Windsor Festival. It was a free festival, just freaks. They would just basically squat a field somewhere and set up stages and generators, and we'd have music for like a week. And so once we squatted Stonehenge.
Oh, wow.
Next to Stonehenge, which was just, that was, I cannot tell you how unbelievable that was. Hawkwind was there, and it was just incredible. And
Savage
would like that.
Did you broadcast from
Yes, from the festivals. And we would, so I'd have to climb up like a 200-foot tall oak tree, one of the Queen's oak trees, and attach antennas and plug into the mixer at the back of the stage, and we'd be broadcasting, you know, to the whole of Southeast England. This illegal,
oh my God.
Because it was an illegal festival, and we were illegal
broadcasters.
Pirating.
You know, I have to tell you, but when you talk about attaching an antenna to the top of an oak tree, it's very similar to how we're set up here at Cowes.
That's true.
We have an antenna in the top of a redwood tree, as I recall, up at Oxenlarts and College. Somebody shinnied up there, and
yeah.
So so you really haven't diverted that far. You've just kind of changed root systems.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. More western type of tree. Yeah.
Right. So you were broadcasting. That must have been a huge. I mean, people really must have tuned in. Were you?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Now, were there a lot of people broadcasting from that particular?
Just us.
Just.
And there was about maybe 20,000 people there, or something,
wow.
30,000, or something like that. And,
yeah.
And you know, people were saying that we were louder than the BBC. You know, it just depends if you're open, where
yeah.
the antenna is. You can just come in amazing. So we were just blasting the BBC out of the water.
And this must have been a very famous occurrence. I mean, this got a lot of attention, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think the next week we got really busted badly by the, you know, by the
yeah.
authorities, because they didn't like how much exposure we got.
Right. Were you able to broadcast through the entire festival, or did they close you down? It's not a festival, but it was a spontaneous kind of festival. Did you get through the week, or did they come and get you?
We did 4 days continuous, but then actually we was lucky, because the next day they'd come to some sort of agreement that they were going to be allowed to stay there and then go a certain day, but of course the authorities reneged, and they came in like 6 a.m. in the morning and just rousted all everybody. It was a very nasty thing that happened.
Really? But musicians too?
Oh, yeah, everybody got rousted, everything got wrecked, and it was very sad.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
But everyone had a great time anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And, in spite of all that.
Yeah.
So they busted you. What happened after that? Was that a big bust for you? Was it...
That was a pretty big one, yeah, uh-huh. if I remember rightly. That was like, that was like the axes and the dogs and dozens of police and,
wow.
and really a major bust, yeah.
Did you go to jail? Did you pay a fine again? How the hell did you come up with the money for all these fines?
Well, luckily the fines weren't a lot. They were billed. So,
yeah.
You know, you just, you know, plead ignorance and hopefully they reduce the
now,
fines.
But would they start to recognize you in court? I mean, didn't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, after the first time, I mean, it was obvious I couldn't plead. Well, I didn't know.
It would depend on the disguise and the accent, I guess.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah. But did they know you? Did they start to know you as El Supremo?
Well, I suppose, yeah, they knew it was me after a time. But funny enough, actually, it was funny talking about names. One particular trial, there was like about four of us standing there. And one of our DJs, he called himself Lord Amory. He wasn't a lord, but he just affected that title.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So everyone had to say their name, and so he said Lord Amory. And so the prosecutor guy goes up, "I object, Your Honor. You know, this is obviously not this man's name. You know, all this blather, like, you know, all the wigs on and everything. You know, the judge sitting up there, you know, shaking his head. What the hell am I doing here anyway?" And so the judge was just wonderful. He says, "I don't care what his name is. If he calls himself Lord Amory at this trial, that's what his name is." let's get on with it.
Oh, God. And they just, and the way they did.
And the way they went.
Yeah. So you were doing this for several years.
Yeah.
And what happened? When did you decide to get out of the, did you decide or?
I met a woman and so things were happening, and then things were pretty bad economically in England in the 70s. It was very, very, very bad. Recession and depressions. And
I remember it was very unpleasant.
Yeah, there was power outages.
Yes.
And that, you know.
I had a little bedsitter at some point, I think in 73. Mm. And you had to keep feeding the meter.
Right.
And my landlord, and you freeze to death if you didn't. And it gave out this, you know, paltry little heat. You had to sit right next to it.
Right.
And my landlord was so upset with me for feeding it because it was just a terrible time. It was hard.
You're using the heat too much.
I was using too much heat. And I was freezing to death using the, and also using up all the money I had because it was 25 pence or whatever it was at the time.
Yeah.
It got expensive. And then it was drab. It was drab. It was dreary. People were, you know, depressed.
It was. It was a very depressing time.
Yeah. Not like here where everything is like this and gay,
and
mortgages payment so easy as pie. So you were a little bit later on in the 70s, and so
yeah.
Tell me what was the process for you? For you met this lovely lady,
yeah, and then she was from California. She'd been to done the whole hippie trip to India and back,
yeah.
And she was on the way back.
Pondicherry? Did she go to Pondicherry?
I think so.
Wow. Yeah.
Pretty much all over, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And Goa. I know
she liked Goa. Everyone went to Goa. A lot of people went there.
Exactly. Yeah. Cheap living on the beach.
Yes.
And and so we decided, well, let's just... I know. We had... we got a letter from her mother who lived in L.A.
Uh-huh.
It was about Christmas, and opened it up, and there was this picture of L.A. on the beach on Christmas Day. It was like 93, it said, and we were, as you were saying, huddled round the fire, frozen, and we're saying, why are we doing this? Let's go over to, you know, let's go over to California and get away from the cold.
Wow. And you did.
And so we just gradually, you know, changed things around and headed over.
So how did you ease out of your slot on your radio show? What did you say? How did you start approaching that?
Well, you know, I mean, it was other guys, you know, were doing it. And so, you know, it was time for me to go, you know.
Yeah.
And it was okay.
Do you remember your last show there?
Oh, dear. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't. there was a pretty big bust up by Hampstead Heath we did, right?
Oh,
up by
yeah.
the Vale of Health. A huge bust. That, I think, may have been...
Yeah.
But, I mean, just incredible. And just the energy involved in it. And just, you know, even if you're up all night, I mean, many times we'd be up and then everyone would fall asleep and the same record would keep playing and things. I mean, it didn't matter.
Somewhat like cows. I always felt that, except we had this computer that won't allow us to make mistakes like that.
I know, we didn't have that.
You didn't have that? No, yeah. So you just fell asleep at the wheel. It would continue to turn.
Yeah, we didn't even have an abacus.
Oh my God. And so that was, what year was that? Was the end of your...
Yeah, 77. Then came over here.
So you came over here. Are you with the same lady?
No,
different, yet. Different. But she got you here, and then she got you to the lady you're with now, which is
a
good thing.
That's true.
So you were, you came to Los Angeles. What was your impression of LA?
Oh dear, yeah, it was very eager to leave it. Let's put
it that way. You got there, and isn't it the ugliest place?
Yeah.
You can't believe people come to Los Angeles and it's just miles of ugliness.
Yeah, and it's beautiful in its own sense, but they've destroyed it.
Yes, it's destroyed now for sure. But I mean, well, it's having a kind of renaissance right now. Apparently Hollywood and I love Echo Park and out in Eagle Rock you know, and it's nice out there. But Beechwood, there's certain areas that are still pretty nice, but it's...
Yeah.
When you first come to Los Angeles, it's a big shock, isn't it?
It is.
Was that your first trip to America?
I had come actually in 72 for a trip. I'd actually taken a job on a kids' camp in upstate New York in the Catskills
as
a counselor.
Yeah, yeah. How'd you do?
Oh, it was wild. It was actually a fat kids camp, which was really very unusual. Quite a baptism into America, I must admit.
Yeah. Were they fat Jewish children?
Mostly, yeah. I would say mostly from New York. There was about maybe 75% were Jewish, I think.
Oh, that'd be so sweet. Yeah. It'd be very soulful. Yeah.
Oh, it was sad, actually.
It was very sad, I imagine.
It was to see, you know, what their parents had done to them, basically. And the sad thing, halfway through, you know, it was like a parent's day. And so you
want to kill these people when you met them, I'm sure.
And the thing is, they brought up all these candies and food. They were paying a fortune to have these kids at this fat farm. And they brought up all these candies. And
of course they did. Yeah. It's like Stockhausen syndrome or something. eat. Oh, duh. Oh, it's terrible.
Oh. Very sad.
Very sad. It's so sad that I can't stop laughing.
I drove across America on a Triumph Bonneville 650 that I brought over.
Wow, that must have been all this leaping from tall buildings to avoid the cops, and then you've got this motorcycle going across. You were really you're quite the adventurous guy. You're like the James Bond of pirate radio.
Yeah, I suppose so. It's fun.
And you came across, the whole country on the motorcycle.
Yeah.
Wow.
And went to
Route 66. Did you do?
I did go on Route 66 actually, and one of the reasons why I went to Bonneville. Because my bike was a Bonneville, I went to Bonneville Salt Flats in Utah, and of course went over the ton on it.
On
the Salt Flats.
How fast did you go?
It was just over. I was pretty heavily laden, so I went about 105. I think that was about all.
Jeez, Louise! Yeah. Oh my God! Was that scary or was it fun or was it?
It was very
both.
Scary. Actually, but I had to do it.
105 is like, that's very fast on a motorcycle. One false move and you're just, you know.
Exactly.
You're frittata.
But when you're 22, who cares?
That's right. You're having a great time. And then did you make it all the way out to California?
Yes, I did. I don't know if we've got enough time right now. I had an absolutely ridiculous, what would you call it, meeting with a herd of buffalo.
Where?
In the Badlands of South Dakota.
Oh, be darn.
And
on your motorcycle?
On my motorbike, yeah.
Wow.
To cut a long story short, I actually rode with the buffalo. I was like riding and they were like running with me.
Oh,
it was
my
the most amazing
God.
Experience.
And how long did you do that?
It was just a couple of hundred yards.
That's enough.
Yeah, that was plenty enough. They were right next to me. You know.
And then did you speed ahead of them? Did they allow you to get back past them? And
it was on like a very narrow, rocky road.
Jeez.
And they sheered off down to the prairie.
Aren't they amazing creatures? Oh. And they're huge.
They are huge. I mean, I'll never forget, I was holding onto my bike and I turned to the left to look at what was there, and I saw this huge horn and this huge eye
Oh my God. We're speaking to Arnaldo Levine, and unfortunately we're coming very close to the end of the evening. We've absolutely smoked 2 hours of the most fun interview, really. We've been finding out who Arnaldo Levine really, really is and why he's been scoring all these great interviews with all these old British rockers, et cetera, and legends, people like Richard Thompson and Brian Auger and David Davies and
Van Dyke Parks.
Van Dyke Parks. He's an amazing guy. Oh. And next Friday, not this Friday, but coming, one after, he will be speaking with
Cindy Sheehan
on the 31st. She'll be here walking amongst us here at the Farmers Market, which is every Friday night. I'm going to announce that Howard Station Cafe, which is at the bottom of our media tower, the Cows Media Tower, allows Howard Station to operate on the bottom floor. Yeah, Howard Station Cafe announces their new beer and wine garden, Arnaldo.
Yes.
Opening Friday nights during the Farmers Market in Occidental. Organic beer and wines, ice creams, and gourmet milkshakes. Oh, I know. As well as their already great coffee and pastries. Come join us. Is anybody going to twist your arm on that? I mean,
definitely. I mean, if that doesn't twist your arm and Cindy Sheehan doesn't twist your arm to come down here.
Have a gourmet milkshake with Cindy Sheehan. What an amazing place we live in, wow. Arnold. You know, yeah. Here we are. We're almost at 10, and we didn't even find out how you got here.
Oh, right.
West County. We have, like, you know, part deux, you know. it's like a BBC serial now. We, you know.
Exactly.
My night with Arnaldo. Oh, that yeah. sounds maybe. My conversation with Arnaldo is the name of this. You've had a fascinating time of it. And we only got you up to about 24, 25.
Yeah, we really skimmed a lot of it. But that's the fun of it.
Yeah, yeah. So when you got out here, now you're on the radio again. Is this your first radio gig since your pirate days, or have you had others in between?
No, I've appeared just on them as a guest, you know, like being questioned or, you know, in a different situation like that, but not as an actual program or a DJ, yeah.
Have people had you as a guest because of your pirate radio history, or for other things?
Oh no, for other things. In San Francisco, when I lived there, I was involved in a lot of civic activism. So I got invited to speak on different things.
Are you a lefty?
You mean left-handed writing or
lefty liberal?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I'm not sure what. See, in England, liberal is different from what a liberal is here.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've always been very confused what an American liberal is.
Well, I think American liberals are confused. It's what American liberal is too. But you're pretty good. You're on the. Totally.
Yeah. So. Subtle anarchy is my motto.
Mine as well. That's why I think why we live here in beautiful. You know, beautiful West County, because there's a wonderful mindset here, isn't there?
There is. Very, very comfortable community and people, just the creativity and the welcoming. It really is a remarkable place if people don't know it.
Yeah, and we also live in it's geographically one of the most beautiful places on earth.
Yeah.
Let's keep it a secret. Don't move here. There are open sewers. People are mean.
Yeah.
Just come, but go. That's all we ask.
Pick an apple and go.
Yeah, pick an apple and go. Arnaldo, I can't thank you enough. This has been so much fun. And I'd love to have you on again. So perhaps after this movie, and let's talk about it again. It's called Rock...
The Boat That Rocked.
The Boat That Rocked, which is a film based on the activities of the pirate broadcasters. Should be very fun.
Yeah.
And you'll be pushing that. Tell us again when your show is.
Yeah, my show is on every Friday from 7 to 9. And so there's always something interesting. I say you got the Trogs on this week. And
wonderful. You're going to have an interview with the Trogs.
Yeah, with Reg Presley, the lead singer.
Wonderful.
And, you know, also on Tuesday, just this afternoon, also somebody who's getting some great stuff is David G. He had Gary Wright on this afternoon for Dreamweaver.
Oh, wonderful.
Guy. So he had a great interview with him. So and he's had the Turtles on, Flo and Eddie. So Cowes is getting a lot of stuff going.
Yeah, Cowes is, one of the best little stations going. And we hope that you agree out there in the world. And thank you so much. This is Teresa, live from the Double Wide. I will not be here next week. My guest host will be... Aaron, who usually follows me, and Aaron does not appear to be here tonight. I guess he has a guest presenter, and she'll announce herself as soon as she gets on. This is Teresa Tadouri. I've been interviewing Arnaldo Levine. Arnaldo, thank you so very much. Oh. I'm going to have to pick up the interview where you came in at 24, 25, and we'll find out what you were doing past then. And thank you for having the chutzpah and the cojones to be a pirate radio station DJ, because that really informed and helped get the music out into the world in a way that it would not have otherwise.
Right. That's
true. So you're a real pioneer and you are like a 007 for the good guys jumping between buildings. I mean, you could have died getting this, doing this. So
many times.
Many times. We want to thank you. For the collective here would like to thank you from the bottom of our hearts, and I personally, for this wonderful interview. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you so much, and thank you, Teresa. You are a world-class talent, and just thank you so much for having me on.
Well, thanks. This is Teresa. I will not be here next week, but week after next, I'll be back, hopefully, with Live from the Double Wide. Thank you so much. Love to the community.
want you to know that I care.